You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
We live in the golden age of athleticism. Everywhere around the world, sports people are getting faster, stronger, and more explosive. They are recovering from injuries quicker. One of the primary reasons for this is the rapidly advancing field of sports science. Welcome to Secrets of Sports Science, a podcast series into the exciting and ever-changing world of elite sporting performance. I'm your host Rudranil Sengupta, and each week I'll be talking to leading experts from the field to bring you a peek into the makings of a modern athlete. Hey, what's up? Welcome to the very first episode of Secrets of Sports Science. On this episode, joining me today is a man who could have been called Mr. Cricket if that epithet hadn't been taken by his fellow Australian, Michael Hussey. Anyone who knows anything about Indian cricket will know his name. It's John Gloster, and he has been a physiotherapist with the Indian team before the concept was, you know, even in vogue in cricket. And he's worked with the IPL since its inception in 2008, and he's been with the same team always. Rajasthan Royals, it's a team that's doing very well in this edition, set to make the playoffs. So Mr. Gloster must be a happy man. Thank you so much, John, for joining us. And how are you today?
Absolute pleasure. And I think you mentioned cricket in there and my journey in cricket, but I like to think that my contribution now is beyond the world of cricket. And I think that's why we all do what we do, is that we feel that we're able to contribute from one arena into other arenas to benefit a greater amount of people. So it's great to be here. And again, sharing on such a valuable little topic.
Right. When you say beyond cricket, would you care to elaborate what you mean? I know that you work with some of our Tokyo Olympics bound athletes as well, and you work with schools and the education system in Mumbai.
Yeah, look, beyond cricket. Look, cricket's been a fantastic vehicle for us to use as a messenger almost for good. And I think that's really important. But the other sports still need a lot of attention as well. And I think, you know, my relationship and association with the Go Sports Foundation in India, with the Olympians, the Paralympians, has been an incredible, certainly learning experience for me, but for me to also take my learnings from another sport arena and sports science arena into benefit them as well. So that's been an incredible opportunity for me as well as for our athletes, the Indian athletes.
Yeah, but you've taken your expertise at the elite level, working, you know, this long and varied experience you've had at the elite level, and you've now taken it to the grassroots as well. Tell us a little bit more about that.
The other area for me that's really important is children, and you touched on the sports education space, and I've been intimately involved in the sports education space in India over the last 7 or 8 years as well, trying to unpack this whole understanding of how important physical education is for our kids, not just on their sporting outcomes for this nation, but also their health and wellness outcomes as well as their academic outcomes, believe it or not. So I believe that we need to really dig back down deeper into the pyramid and have a look at the base a little more at the grassroots level and at the sports education level to ensure that we're adequately skilling our kids with the what we call physical literacy and motor competence skills to take them to better places in the sporting arena if that's what they desire, but also better places on the health and wellness front as well.
Right, absolutely. But, you know, putting our focus back on cricket, I'd like to begin with how you assess a player. In the IPL, for example, you've got players from such diverse backgrounds making up a team. Some of them are veterans of the international game. Some are at the peak of their careers, some nearing the end of their careers, and some are teenagers who've never played at that level. So what's the first thing you do when the team comes together for a season?
The most important thing is conversation. And part of the conversation with a player is their history. Your history tells you more about that player than anything else. And you touched on it exactly there, is that there are so many different nationalities, cultures, backgrounds, ages, you know, that have all come together into this melting pot, which is the IPL dressing room. But the most important thing for all of them is their history. So that when we talk about history, we talk about their playing history, we talk about their injury history, we talk about their training history, we talk about, you know, their wellness and fitness and nutrition history. So there's a whole sort of conversation that starts that allows us to build a picture about an individual.
So that's very interesting. You're telling me that despite all the technology that you have at your disposal, and I know you, John, you use a lot of tech, and we're going to get into that later into this episode. But what you're telling me is despite all that technology, that the conversation, the good old conversation, is what is more important to you, right? So you've got that very important conversation out of the way. What's next? What happens then? Does your impressive array of technology come into play then?
We then do our normal screenings and our physical musculoskeletal sort of observations of these individuals. But it doesn't tell us as much as having that first conversation with them about where they've been and what they've done. So as an example, you know, if you have a player who has got an excellent sporting record, excellent injury record, they're at the peak of their careers. That's why they're all in the IPL, because they're obviously all very good at what they do. And they are, you know, performing as we want them to perform. Then sometimes we then go to the musculoskeletal screening side of it, and we see a lot of things wrong with that athlete, you know, from a screening perspective. But because they are now currently presenting without any major injury issues, their performance is not being affected, raises the question then about, you know, do we interfere? So I've always said that, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's one of my mantras. So we absorb this data, we take it all on board, and we only start changing things if they start to present with either performance problems or with injury issues.
Yeah, don't fix something that's not broken. That's always a good mantra to live by. But one of the tricky things, I would suppose, coming into the IPL, since the IPL kind of happens within the international cricket calendar, and there's always this tug and pull between international cricket and these franchisee leagues, is just how much cricket is too much cricket for the players. And is that something that concerns you when you are first assessing people for a season?
We know now, with the current environment of cricket and what they're playing, is that loading or inappropriate loading, either too much or too little, is probably one of the biggest predictors of injury that we have. So looking at their previous month's loading and what types of cricket they're playing is very, very important to how we monitor their risks or assess their risks coming into a tournament such as the IPL. And data has allowed us to do that more accurately and more effectively. So, for example, we know that through Catapult GPS data collection, that the exertions in, say, 4 and 5 day cricket, or the longer forms of the game, versus those in the shorter formats, IPL format, T20 format, is significantly different, particularly in what we call the high speed running efforts. So the greatest injury risk lies in high speed running. Now, if you're coming from a format of the game where there's a 30% less high-speed running efforts in 5-day cricket than they are in T20 cricket, and they haven't had time to build up their high-speed running loads, then we know there is significant risk of lower limb muscle injuries. So these are sorts of things now, through data collection from various wearable devices, that are now opening our eyes to risk and identifying risk early, and therefore appropriately training these guys to minimize that risk as much as possible.
You know, I would have thought that in a 5-day game, even if you didn't have to sprint at maximal effort too many times, just the fact that you're doing it over 5 days would build up the kind of volume. Because, you know, in training, for example, you wouldn't want somebody to do, let's say even a sprinter, you wouldn't want them to sprint every day. You would want them to do it maybe once or twice a week, right, in training. So doesn't that volume build up over 5 days? You know, and clearly it doesn't, because from the data that you're talking about, a single T20 match has more sprinting than a test match.
That's right. So there's volume. So there's endurance volume versus, you know, maximal effort volume. So they're very, very different in both forms of the game. So you need to be prepared for both. If I send a T20 player out to play a five-day game straight after, you know, the IPL, for example, goes straight into a test series, he's also at significant risk injury because he hasn't developed his endurance capabilities. You know, if you look at the numbers around total distances covered in a day's play in a five-day, in a test match for a bowler, you know, they're up around the 20 to 25 kilometre total distance covered in one day's play versus, you know, 7 to 8 kilometres covered in a T20 match. So this is about preparing for the format. And data has now allowed us to have that conversation around preparing adequately for a particular format of the game. So we talk about protecting our players. We don't protect our players by wrapping them in cotton wool. We protect them by exposing them to the to the efforts that they're going to be undertaking during a match scenario. So therefore, using data from our GPS trackers, the match day efforts, so that's high speed running efforts, top speeds, time spent in certain speed zones, total distances covered, and what we call our player load measurements, therefore become your baseline data. Because effectively, if you're not reaching some of those targets in your training, then you're not adequately prepared for the exertions that you'll be undertaking on a match day. So you'll always come into a match underprepared. So these are real eye-openers for us.
Yeah, it must have been fascinating when you first began to study and see this data.
So I remember when we first started using technology or GPS technology back in the early, mid-2000s, and when the data first came into us, we thought it was wrong. I mean, how can a cricketer, you know, be in one day international, be doing, you know, covering 12 to 15 kilometers of total distance in a day? It was like, no, that doesn't make sense. And then the data you were getting from the 4-day and 5-day exertions was, you know, 20, some of the players are up around the 24, 25 kilometers total distance covered in a day's play. But, you know, so on the back of these understandings, we now train very, very differently. And on the back of those understandings, we now understand more about where risk lies around chronic versus acute loads, particularly in our fast bowlers, and getting those, you know, getting that right. So look, you know, data has become our best friend. Absolutely. Data is critical. But I said to you before about there are other pieces of information that are just as critical to me in making decisions around risk analysis on our players. And conversation is probably the first one, the history. You know, we sometimes, you know, totally forget that there is a human being attached to all that data.
Right. And of course, you get individuals with very different personalities and, you know, mental processes, some who are obviously more aware of their bodies and they know how to speak about.
Absolutely. But isn't that the beauty of IPL? And isn't that the beauty of the modern dressing room is that we have that. And that therefore becomes a learning experience, not just for the players amongst themselves, but a huge learning experience for us, the clinicians who are surrounding and managing those players. So, again, the beauty of this IPL has allowed us to learn and grow in our professions enormously as well, and learn to embrace all this new knowledge that's coming out of the mixed cultural dressing rooms.
Right. I get the feeling from what you're saying that the training environment now in cricket has become highly individualized. Is that correct? Is it all focused on, like, you know, you have different programs for each person in the team?
Yeah, absolutely. Because everybody's different, you know. Absolutely, you know there's a Bengali there, there's a West Indian there, there's an Australian there, there's a Gujarati Jain there. You know, everybody physiologically, emotionally, culturally, is very, very different. So the individualized approach now, again, we can do more efficiently and effectively because of the inputs that we have. But you're totally right. You know, this insight, you know, the more I know about you, the individual, the better I can then help you perform better, reduce your injury risk, manage your recovery better, all the things we talk about. But that comes from insight. So, and that insight is the numbers, absolutely, the data, the wearable technologies we use and whatever. But it's also, there's a little bit beyond the collecting of numbers, and that's what we do with it first and foremost. But high performance management is also about bringing this whole mental health equation back into the mix as well. And our understanding of it, of the effect of that on physical performance and physical outcomes.
Also, the other thing with the IPL is the constant nature. I mean, of course, this season, you're not really flying around across India, but usually you're like, you finish one match and, you know, that night you've taken a flight to the next venue and a day later you're back on the ground playing another match and, you know, and it goes on and on and on. So that must be a nightmare for you, or a very interesting challenge. You know, especially when it comes to recovery protocols, how do you handle that?
Yeah, that was always the big issue for us. But, you know, if we take a step back and think about what is the most important component, really, of what we do is, you said it, recovery. So if recovery is affected in any way, it's therefore going to affect performance and then ultimately it's going to increase injury risk. So getting recovery right when we were traveling every second day and on and off airplanes, and, you know, was very, very difficult. And I think everybody struggled with that. And you know, a travel day is not a recovery day. It's actually a very stressful day for the physical as well as emotional. So eliminating that has given significant benefits in our management of recovery, absolutely. But on the other hand, it brings up a host of other issues, which is, you know, boredom, the same space. People say that, you know, a change is as good as a holiday. Sometimes a change of environment is the same. So therefore, it comes back to, okay, how do we manage this environment and how do we keep this environment dynamic and changing and stimulating and inviting? Because environment determines so many things and it's a critical part of recovery. So thinking beyond the physical part of recovery, you know, environment dictates so many other things. And getting that right. So your hotel, therefore, is the most obvious one you have to get right. Do you have the right recovery facility? So full-time access to a swimming pool, 24 access to a good gymnasium setup, to the outdoor space and sort of mental, what we call mental retreat areas, which means outdoor space, greenery, you know, sort of relaxing environments. Do you have a really invigorating, exciting team room filled with lots of activities and distractions, good distractions? And probably most important of all, do we satisfy the food and nutrition agenda? If you don't get food right and you're stuck in the same confines of the same hotel, and you know how important food is culturally to particularly the guys from the subcontinent, if you don't get that piece right, you've immediately got them offside. So, you know, so recovery is not just about the physical. If they're disturbed mentally because they're not getting the right foods or their comfort foods or their, you know, ability to sort of culturally connect with something, and often it's food, then you get the player offside and then that will affect performance.
So a good hotel, a good swimming pool, good food, basically all the good things in life. But just like you use a lot of data in terms of on the training field, you use a lot of gadgets and data for recovery as well, isn't that right?
Yes, we still have our swimming pools, we have our ice baths, we have our masseurs, we have you know, our compression pumps, we have our game ready machines. But we now have at our disposal things like, you know, bioceramic FIR technology garments for recovery and sleep, which is a fascinating topic. We now have our, you know, last year we rolled out the Aura rings to monitor sleep data, which is absolutely critical. Heart rate variability, temperature fluctuations, breathing rates, heart rates, you know, all these things, you know, have all sort of taken our recovery protocols to the next level. So I think that's,
and that's a ring. Did you say it's a wearable?
Yeah. It's a wearable. I'm wearing one right now, actually. So it's probably been the biggest game changer for me, next to Catapult. And because it's one thing for me to say to someone, look, sleep's important, you know, or alcohol's not good for you before you go to bed or before a performance, you know, but how do I demonstrate that apart from just saying it? Because they've heard that a million times. But if I've now got a device that comes up on their app on their phone, that talks to their app on their phone and shows you exactly your sleep, you know, all your sleep profiles, how many minutes you spend in this, you know, REM sleep or deep sleep or light sleep or awake, how many times you move at night, what your breathing rates are, most importantly, what your heart rate variability score is, because that's your definitive marker of recovery physiologically. You know, if I can come to them the next morning with that data and say, well, this is why sleep is important. Or, you know, if you by having alcohol the night before a match does this to your sleep and does this to your heart rates and does this to your heart rate variability, are you actually prepared for the big game the next day? So this has probably been the biggest tool conversation starter again for an athlete, and probably our best recovery tool, I think, to date, because we've now come back to understanding just how important sleep is for so many things, and COVID's taught us that as well, for immunity, for a host of other things, but also for recovery and improving performance. So we've drilled down very deeply on sleep now. So how do we improve sleep and using FIR, what we call it, far infrared technology garments. So these are wearable garments, like it's just like a t-shirt or trousers that the players sleep in and do their recovery in, which is a, you know, their bio ceramic infused garment that improves sleep. It improves microcirculation. Well, it improves, it acts at a mitochondrial level.
But how does it do that?
So in terms of mitochondrial turnover, stimulating microcirculation, there's some reasonably good evidence now around this. So improving balance reactions, believe it or not. And, you know, this might only be a 1% improvement or a 2% improvement, but that's 1% or 2% more than the guy in the other team who's not wearing it. So when you start adding up all these little 1%ers, that's when you start to make big differences. So these garments allow us, again, to just, right, even for the conversation around why I've given it to you as a player, because I genuinely believe that by wearing it, something positive is going to happen to you. You know, so I think these are really important ways of building relationships with your players as well. Is that if they're going to, you know, if they understand that we as a franchise are going this extra mile to ensure that they may sleep better, or they may have less soreness the next day after an exertion, or, you know, their circulation's slightly better, then that's a real buy-in, you know, that they're saying, well, hang on, they're going that extra mile, then I'll go the extra mile for them. So these are the little pieces. I think you've only got to go and talk to someone like what's his name, the NFL seven-time quarterback, what's his name, Tom Brady. I mean, Tom Brady is a massive fan of a bioceramic FIR technology garments. I mean, he is a huge fan. He's sort of pioneered their use in elite sport, and for his, particularly for his sleep performance. So, you know, I think we need to, one of my jobs, and I think more importantly, is that all of us in our positions, is we need to look at other sports in order to get better at our sport, to give our athletes every opportunity of learning from elsewhere. And it brings me back to my original point about, you know, why do I do what I do? Why am I still in India 18 years later? Because there's a bigger picture here. And it's about the learnings that we take from our space. How do others eventually benefit from that? You know, all the wellness technologies were all pioneered in the elite sports space. And you've probably heard me say this before, or a lot of people would have, is that I still see, I use the Formula One sort of analogy, where all the technologies that are pioneered in the Formula One arena, from, you know, turbocharging to disc brakes to traction control to, you know, whatever it may be, eventually ends up in your road car. to make your road car perform better, be safer, et cetera, et cetera. So it's exactly what we're doing in our space. We're using my knowledge in the elite sports space, in the IPL arena, in the Olympic arena, wherever that may be, use those learnings to come back and benefit everybody eventually. You know, so our understandings about, you know, why do we use, you know, continuous glucose monitoring on some individuals? Because we need to understand better how they use glucose, how exercise affects their glucose performance. But they're learnings that are critical to where we are in India at the moment. You know, diabetes, 67% of the population of India are pre-diabetic. We know that. We know the numbers. I'm seeing that in elite athletes. I'm seeing, you know, 30% of our elite athletes are pre-diabetic. So how do we use our knowledge and understandings and learnings, learnings in the elite sports space to come back and ultimately benefit everybody and be less of a burden on the healthcare system? Because that's ultimately what we're here for, is to help people.
18 years in Indian cricket. I just want to end with you telling me a story from the first time that you came here, one of your first impressions when you worked with the Indian team, something that has stuck with you after so many years.
It probably wasn't such a big, I'm going to use the word culture shock, because I'd come from Bangladesh. Remember, I had 4 years of Bangladesh cricket before I came to India. The biggest leap for me professionally, socially, culturally, was my journey from English cricket, because I had three, four years in England, English cricket, absolutely, and very successfully so, into Bangladesh. That was probably the bigger leap for me. But one of the lessons that I took from the Surrey dressing room probably was around that Surrey dressing room at the time in the late 90s was, early 2000s was, completely dominated by very, very, very large personality individuals and very successful. The entire first 11 when I were there were international cricketers. So one learning from that was when I came to the...
Who were some of the players that were there in the dressing room?
Thorpe, Butcher, Hollyoaks, Tudor, Bicknell, Salisbury, Sacklane, Ward, Browns, I mean, you go back and look at the sort of 97, 98 through to sort of 2000, and virtually the entire English team, and Sacklane, you know, and then after Saka, Azam, Mahmood, all these, unbelievable squad. And the best person, you know, Keith Medlicott, who was the coach at the time, was a brilliant man manager. So I took a lot of interesting learnings out of that dressing room. That helped me a lot when I came to the Indian dressing room, because that was dominated by the best cricketers in the world at the time. When you look at that Indian dressing room with, you know, Sachins, Lakshmans, Dravids, you know, I mean, that was an amazing dressing room. So those learnings were particularly valuable for me. The learnings I brought from Bangladesh was the cultural learning and the cultural sensitivities and the cultural understandings. You know, would I do things differently now as opposed to what I did, when I first, you know, end of 2004 or whenever it was? You know, yes, absolutely, because I've learned more since then, you know, and not just in my professional space, but in the overall sort of subcontinent space. But you know, there's learnings that you take from every dressing room. And it's like any cricketer, you will take learning from any dressing room that they're in and grow from those experiences. And any captain, you know, it was wonderful for me to see someone like MS Dhoni in the back end of my career and the beginning of his, was how he, as an early captain, took pieces of previous captains and put them all together to become who I think was probably the ultimate captain worldwide in cricket, was MS. You know, he had a bit of... you know, a bit of Saurav in him. He had a bit of Rahul Dravid in him. He had a bit of, you know, everybody mixed up together. But you need that, you know. And the beauty of someone like MS was he was able to take the best of everybody and put it in to benefit his game. And I'd like to think that I've taken little bits of the best from dressing rooms and environments that I've been to bring that to my game as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, John, for taking time out in the middle of the tournament for this. It was absolutely fascinating, and I think half an hour passed like it was 10 minutes for me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure, as always, and thanks to you guys for always putting out some really quality stuff on the world beyond just cricket. Thank you.
this was an episode of Secrets of Sports Science. I'll be back next week with a new guest. Until then, if you have any questions, you can write to me at rudranil@gmail.com. That's rudranil@gmail.com. For the latest updates on this podcast, do like and follow at HT Smartcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast. HT Smartcast.